Okay, Sid.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'm now talking to Sid Berry in his house. As I said before, Sid was born in April 1920, which makes him 85 now. And I suppose what we will ask first, Sid, is you joined the Navy in September 1940. First of all, why did you join and why did you become a cook?
Well, it was I always wanted to go to sea, because when I was a child, my mother took me down to her people down at Shorehampton, Bristol, and the aunties down there, they made a fort. Well, I was a doll for them, you know, because I was quite a young kid. And on a Sunday morning,
That's okay, keep chatting. Yeah, we'll make, yeah.
I dressed me up in my best, you know, best pair of white trousers and that. And we used to walk along the portway and towards Bristol, and all these big liners, well, big ships was coming up. And Aunt Oliver said, I said, I would like to go on one of those big ships. And she said, you will one day, one day. And of course, that's where I was on it. And she said, you'll never drown. And I said, well, what was that? And he said, because she was born with a caul over her face.
Oh, right.
And she said, people who are born like that will never die by drowning. That
That's
was another
interesting.
thing.
That's an old village wise tale, yeah.
And of course, I kept it up, and I come in the Navy, and that's how I wanted to go there. I didn't want to go in the army. And at the time, I've always been employed in the village on different people, you know, when I was that age. And at that time, I was baking bread in the courses there by the stile.
Yeah. In the old bakehouse it
In
is
the
now,
old bakehouse there. And anyway, I got a little motorbike, and my pal was about named Irons. And Joe Irons, and we said we'll go up to Northampton. That's the nearest recruiting place to the Navy. So on this Wednesday afternoon, I got half a day, you see, and old Joe got half a day, and off we went to Northampton to find the recruiting office. Well, it was a rugged old place.
You had to go as far as Northampton.
Yeah,
Gosh, yeah.
to get to
That's quite a long time, way in those days, yeah.
and we went up these old steps and that, like an old red room steps up there, and there was a PO and a chief PO there, and what do you want? Know if we can put our names down for the Navy. He said, how old are you? And I said, well, getting, you know, towards the time when they'll call me up anyway. And he said, what makes it, this will make any odds? I said, well, if we can volunteer now and get our names down, we'll probably get in the Navy. We didn't want to go in the army. So he took all the particulars down and that, and he said, I said, well, we should we know? He said, you'll know soon enough. And whether that made any difference or not, but we both got in.
Oh, that was good, yeah.
You know, the old Joe went as a stoker, and I come on the other way. I said, well, oh, damn it.
All right.
I got a handkerchief somewhere. Ah, can you switch her off?
There
oh,
you
no,
go
I got
there.
her. I got her.
Yep.
And that's how I'm at. And I come back, and the next morning, the old baker said to me, he said, oh, where'd you go yesterday then? I said, well, rode on the motorbike. Oh, no, you didn't. He said, I know where you went. I said, oh, yes. I said, what are you asking me for then? He said, you went to see if you can get in the Navy. I said, yeah, that's right. He said, well, you weren't thinking of me, were you? Not when you weren't there. I said, why not? Because he was on the series in the First World War. And I thought I'd be all right with him. And he said, you better finish at the weekend before him. He gave me the sack.
On the spot?
He said, like,
but this was September 1940, and you were 20 years old, so yeah. Sort of joining was the right thing to do, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that was that. I got, so, of course, I had a couple of jobs. My father said to me, he said, don't worry about getting a job, he said, because you'll be gone soon enough. And he said, you'll have a holiday. But I couldn't rest. And they were building Barford Aerodrome at the time.
Uh-huh.
And somebody said there was always a photon down at Barford to tractor drivers approaching each other. So I jumped on a boat and go down there. And somebody said, you want a job, don't you? I said, oh, yes, for a little while. Are you going to see the colleague? They said, you'll take one of them two on, you'll take his place. So he asked me if I drove a tractor before. I said, well, I drove a van. Oh, that's the same thing. And I got a job there then.
So this filled in until you joined the Navy?
Yeah. Just on there. And I said to the foreman, I said, this is only, I'm only coming to work for you until my papers come.
Yeah.
He said, you'll bring them then in to me. I said, no. He said, yes, you will. He said, I want those and I'll see to them for you. So I said, no. Anyway, the papers came one morning to report to Skegness. And I went down. Anyways, I said, I'm finishing today. I got my papers. You can fetch them, he said, and you're not going. I said, you fetch them and stop me. And that was it.
So you were off.
And then, so that got me off that hook. And then, of course, it wasn't long before I did go and went to Skegness.
Mm.
I would never see the sea before.
It was your first time at the sea?
Yeah.
That must have been a shock.
And every station I got to, I was like, it was Skegness. I must have been a wimp. And then when we got to Skegness station, the old Master at Arms, he was there arranging us up, you know. And I saw some, well, I'd never met people local before, some of the lads and that, the rough lots, and you know. I thought, oh, I don't know whether I'm going to like it now or not, but anyway, I did. And we got on all right there at Skeggy. My highlight there was after the old Master at Arms had give us a bit of drill on the parade ground, he got on me, he reckoned we were the worst lot of blokes he's ever seen in his life. And he used to stamp his hat on and he said, talk about met sailors, he says, you ain't fit for nothing, none of
them. But don't you think he probably said that to all the new?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, he got us going, and the one thing I always stick in my mind, he said, anybody know the weight of the rifle? And some silly devil went and said, no, sir. Well, I'll show you, he said, and just show you what however it is. Would you like that? So he said, yes, sir. So he said, when I said, throw that your rifle on your arm out like that and hold it there and dare drop it, he said, or move it, you will stay there until I tell you. And he had us standing there like this kept going back and he'd shout at you and shout at it like that. And then after a while he said, I'm going to show you just how light that rifle is now. So he said, when I give you the order, he said, and I say, throw that rifle from your hand now to your left hand, and you'll see. And of course, you were that eager to get it from him. He went, whoop, like that. He said, how heavy is it now? Light as a feather. So that was it. And then we had another highlight there was we had a parade in front of the King of Norway, King Haakon.
Yeah.
And all the small boys who couldn't march. We had one who could march with his legs at his arms at the same time. you know, things like that. Yeah. And it struck him all right. Anyway, we got through that. We got done off and, you know, kitted up and all the rest of it. But I'd never smoked, never worn woolen underwear or not, because my mother could never afford it for us, you know. Uh-huh. And I got these old dung hampers, so I called them.
So you're probably fed and clothed quite well, really. You're probably fed and clothed quite well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And we got these two pairs of long pants down to your ankles, and this old navy blue, you know, bit rough it was. You should get wet through and a dye would come out. But all in all, we done very well there. Had a bit of fun there and that. And we removed then. This was getting on for Christmas.
Mm.
The winter was setting in. And Butlin's holiday camp number two. That was a Pwllheli in Wales.
Mm. Yeah.
Under canvas. In the winter.
Was there still basic training or?
Basic training.
So you hadn't become a cook by then?
No, none of that.
Right.
The only reason I got into cookery because I worked for the bakery, you know, and they say, oh, you'll be on a big ship, they need bakeries, bakers and all that for that. Oh, I never got on a big ship at all. Not one. And anyway, I didn't, you know. Couldn't do anything about it. We was up with Pwllheli there. One or two things there. You had to, one half of the tent, the people, the occupants, we had to sit there on all the tent day, while the other had the meals and like that. And of course you were on grain sheets, army grain sheets.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long. And I say you was getting wet through. And I had a bit of a cold or, you know, a chesty thing then. And he said, oh, you better go to the, up to the first aid place. So I gets up there and I, oh, you better get in the hammock and get your hammock and go up there, see the quack when he comes round. So I lay there in this hammock and along comes the sick bay tiffy and he says, oh, you're the one, he said. The doctor's just coming along. He said he'll soon take care of you. So he got one of the bins that they have, you know, like a dish.
Uh-huh.
And along comes the doctor and he said, oh, come on then, that's all right. We'll soon set you all right. Which femur is it? I said, what do you mean? Which finger? He said, I thought you got a whittler on your finger. I said, no, I said, you're able to cut that off. And they made a mistake, so that was another one. Anyway, that was a funny thing up there. And then, because I was, I was fit then, fit for what I was, my age, I suppose. And when we were on outside doing physical exercises and all that with them, the older, it was easy to burn for me, you know, because I'd done a fair bit of running about and that at the bakery and lifting bags of flour and that. And one of the instructors said, have you thought about being, what do you call it, instructor?
Physical training instructor, yeah. PTI.
No, thank you, I'll see the sea. I don't want to make me do all that, but there you are. So we got up there. We had that was where our first the first bomb was seen, and a German come over and dropped a bomb on the beach at Pwllheli.
Oh, that was a long way away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the first one I saw, and then we got moved then, on down to Chatham Barracks just about Christmas time. That was not too bad, but it was a big place, and of course that's when I got into the cookery then.
Uh-huh.
And a little bit of a laughter with that one. There was two chief cooks on one shift, and they were some rum ones. They'd really throw me up against the wall if they could. And this one, he said to me, where do you say you live? I said, oh, Dead End Town. Well, that's near up Rayford, he said. I said, how do you know that? He said, oh, I'm working up there. Well, I said, fancy your work up there. I said, oh, cook.
Was that the Hayford and Air Station then?
Yeah. He said, it wasn't Hayford, it was Hayford, England.
Right.
Before it went to the Yanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, I've worked up there. I said, what, in a galley? He said, no. He said, oh, it was a bricklayer. I always laughed about that. The other one was nearly as bad as him. The other one was a bit tight. And we had one or two bits with him. We used to get gammons, old gammons, and big steam coppers in them, because they've got thousands of men in Chatham at that time. And he'd get all these gammons and turn the steam on. He'd count them all in, turn the steam on straight away, and then he'd go and get his head down. I'll be back at 5 o'clock and open her up. And there was always one missing, but I don't know where the old lady went, but they always pinched one somewhere. So that was another one. And that was a pretty rough time down there, because everybody had to go in the tunnels on the underground as soon as the first siren went, except those on work. And you all went at night down the tunnels when you were to sleep. And of course, being round, and the metal work was like big girders going in around. And of course, the ones who had been down there a while, they knew just what to do. And they'd get two lots of the spars like that, so that the hammer laid out a bit flat. Well, of course, when you went in there a bit late and you went along, there was no way to do it. So you had to make up with like a letter V.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't stand up in the morning with that. So we learned the hard way of that.
Because Chatham was on the route up to London, so you must have got a lot of raids coming over Chatham going to London, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That used to go. We had quite a lot of dues there. And then I finally got a draft ship. And that was to the first destroyer, what we got sunk on.
Moshona, was that?
Yeah, Moshona.
So that was tribal class.
That's it. That's it, two of those.
Yeah.
And I had to go to Immingham on by Hull. And I'd never seen a ship before, not like that. There was wires everywhere. The dockyard, your mates was all working on it. Now, I said, where have I got? Where do I see anybody, mate? He said, they're not all there. Anyway, I got there and we got settled in. And I settled in then because we could get a railway truck up to Hull at night to go ashore, you see. It was a bit of all right, that was. And then we got ready to go north. And we've got... that's right, with that... And we went up the east coast up there, and let's see, I think I've gone wrong somewhere.
Well, this was Moshona, and she was going to be on the Arctic convoys, wasn't she? She's an escort for the Arctic convoy.
That's right. I was on the other one first. I slipped a bit in Norway. We went in the first one.
Is that that was
in Moshona?
Yeah.
The first thing I saw of the North Sea was going across to Norway.
Right. Was that not Moshona, or was that Moshona?
No, no, that was
the
one who got sunk.
Ashanti? No,
Moshona? Ashanti was, that's right, the Moshona.
Moshona?
That's it.
Yeah, Moshona.
That's it. We went across the sea to, we went to Scapa when we went up, oh, that's right, we went up the east coast, up there, and we went to Scapa, and when we got there, there were all the three, what do you call it, the Norwegians.
The free, yeah, Norwegian, yeah.
That's right, they got a free one, and it was two ships, the Princess, free Charlotte, and another one, and one broke down. And so we were left to get the other one back out into these islands, the Lofoten, yes.
That's so it. You went to the Lofoten expedition.
Yeah, and we got in there with the oiler and that. And while we were there, you see, it was a lovely, lovely harbour it was, with trees all round and out of sight. And we managed to catch one merchant ship. So we had prize money for that. They took them farthing or something, I think. It was a door way. And then we were doing patrols up and down the waterways, you see, where to try and get these German destroyers out. Uh-huh. And anyway, they found us first after about a week. And they come out in full speed to bomb us out, so we had to get out there pretty quick. But one thing we caught a trawler while we was up there, and talk about Dad's army. They said that we were for a shot across her bags, you see, and I'll make them. So he said that it made them go faster. And anyway, we finally cornered them up, and we got ready for boarding party, and we hadn't got only one revolver, and they've got truncheons made of wire cable and turned over and put some spun yarn around like that, and that was the boarding party. Anyway, we got on, and these Germans didn't like the look of us then, because we got a point of five up on the after deck. And they swung that round, and they thought they were going to be shot, you see. So they obeyed it, and then we had a bit of a do. The Stoker boys were having a good old do there when they got on this trawler. And one of them went down below on the after deck, found the captain's uniform. So we thought, I'll try this on for size. And he put that on, and another one come down behind him, opened the door, so he said, oh, for Christ's sake, don't shoot. And it was a pair of dropping shrink runner on there, and quite a row over it, but that was funny, that was. And we ended up there, I say. We had to get out quick and make a scarper for it, but we didn't hurt it, I bet, lose anybody, so it was a thing. And we kept a few prisoners. So that was that. Well, after that little episode, we went back to Scapa, and then we were going to America with children. They were taking these children at a shipload to America to be safe.
Right, you were going to escort a ship, or you?
We were going to escort it. And, we were one of the escort vessels, and of course, after this one, they were after the Tirpitz at that time, and the other one, and the Ud got sunk at that time, and of course then every old Irish church was said they got after the big ship, the German big one, the Bismarck. She got me sunk at all cost. And so we were, off we went to join up with the battleships then, the Rodney and the KG-5, And there were two or three cruisers and that, and we were escort. And we finally come up with a Bismarck. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the stations with them, well, I think they started pouring it, the range was about 26 miles. And we was in between the Bismarck and the Rodney, and the shoulders going over the top, which wasn't very... And anyway, they gradually got nearer and nearer, and then in the end, we got fairly near to the Bismarck, and the air skipper, they thought he thought he stood a good chance of putting a fish into the Bismarck and putting her down, you see, but it went through the Dorset Shear, I think it was, and they put the torpedoes down, but she was red hot all the way. The full length of her was a hell of a mess.
But just on fire?
Yeah, just on fire. Oh. And anyway, that was that. So, of course, we was getting short of fuel by this time. And there was us and the another tribe, the Tartar. And they decided to send us back to get to Plymouth to oil up and then come back to the fleet. Well, that sounded all right. But little did we know that when the last bit of machinery on the Bismarck was working, they'd been phoning up for help for the Bismarck to France, and the Fokker Wolfstadt was on its way. And of course the first thing they saw was two little tribal destroyers. So they had to go at us. And we were doing pretty well, I think. Until all of a sudden, it was either a near miss or somebody said it was a torpedo, but it wasn't. It was a gun, it was a bomb thing. And it split number one boiler horn open. And of course, she started taking water, so they had to flood that compartment. And we couldn't do anything about it. They tried to take her in tow, but they couldn't do anything about it. She was listening too much, so it was all hands over the side. So in we went, and they just told her, "Oh, the other way, not that way. Go that way." But it's a big place to see, isn't it?
So where were you when you had to abandon the ship? Were you below decks, on top, or?
Oh no! When the big ships was firing each other at the Bismarck, we could see that.
Yeah, but when you were hit by a bomb on...
Oh no! My place was underneath number one gun turret.
Right.
Putting there was a hoist thing, and you pull this hoist, and it put a proggy up, and then whichever quarter the gun was, I had to put it in there and get for the gun. Gun's crew, you see, like that.
So when you were hit by the bomb from the aircraft, you were actually on the upper deck at the time?
Yeah, well, just underneath the upper deck, you know, that's where the...
So how many people got off?
Oh, we lost about 79 on board there,
I think. Did you? Out of what sort of...
About 200, 200.
So nearly half.
Yeah.
Right.
And we got there... up on that upper deck, and you could see, you know, as you stood up, the portholes was just in front of you, you know, so she was gone right over. And all hands on deck and go. So off we went, thought we picked up with the Tartar. Well, she was a little way away, and of course, the old Germans had spotted her as well. So all the survivors had got up to the Tartar in fairly cloaks, in the floats there.
Yeah.
And instead of tying the blasted rope to the ship, they just let go of it and went up the ropes, you see. And then the bombs started raining down a bit clear, and the Tartar had to start with screws up. And of course, instead of all these ropes being tied to the Carly floats, they all went as the ship went forward, all the swell come backwards and
washed you off.
Yeah. And a big old boy, Simon, he said to me, he said, jump. And I jumped, and I went, the next thing I knew, I was like, well, I didn't realise I was underwater, but I'd somehow acquired a fisherman's life jacket, and that was bits of cork, scores of,
I've seen them in the pictures of the fisherman's friend's throat pastel. They have pictures of fishermen in the old cork life jackets, yes.
And I'd got one of them, and I was proud of that old life jacket. And anyway, when I come to the surface, I couldn't didn't know where I was or anything, but all the water was draining down, and the life jacket had come up over my head. And I thought my head had gone. But anyway, off we went, and looking round, of course the tartar was going out of sight then. All you could see was you'd go up 1 minute and down the next with the sea. And we got lost. It was myself and a young lad, Shorty Lawson, and we kept together. And anyway, so, well, I don't know how many hours it was, but it was nearly night when we got picked up. And it was American East Lynn destroyer.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a job with to getting on board this thing, because they'd got an anti-roll thing, all around these destroyers. And of course, she was rolling a bit, and Shorty was only a little kid, and when he was caught out the edge of this anti-thing around there, as he jumped up to jump on, the wave had come down and hit him on the head. Anyway, I managed to get him up, and then they shouted me, "Come on, you're next. Come on, get off the rope." And I said, "I can't." And I was up, and he said, "Tie it round your waist." I said, "I can't do that. I'll do it round my arm." And I remember this as clear as anything. He said, "That's no good. I'll pull your arm off." And anyway, he slid down this rope and he tied me up and got me up on the deck. And when I got on the back, he just put me in there and threw the oil in. And he said, "I'll be back in a minute." And he come back and he said, "I was up at this." And I didn't know what it was. And anyway, I finished the glass up. And he said, "My God," he said, "you're used to it, ain't you?" And I said, "Well, what was it? It was wrong."
This was on a US destroyer.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed. Medicinal purposes only.
I done well. And anyway, they sorted us out, and the ones who were dead and the ones who were in the galley and that. And then I managed to get a bit from then in the soaker's mess for the night. And then the next day we got into Londonderry and into hospital then. And I couldn't work too well on two legs, because I'd busted that leg then, you see. Oh. That's when I hurt it. And so the two blokes got one call me each side, like, and I went along on one leg, got into hospital. I was just pure embarrassed there, because we've only got just woolens on. Mm-hmm. Else, I hadn't got nothing else.
Oh, I see, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all these people were looking at you, and we're somewhere else. Anyway, I got there and we got in bed and that. And I was swimming like hell in my dreams. And somebody said, "It's all right, my boy, it's all right, this nurse has got hold of me, you're all right, you're safe now." And of course then I had this, I don't know how long I was up there, a month or 6 weeks I suppose, because I'd got all the sinews in the back of my leg had all knotted up, they broke, and they were all in knots right there. And I couldn't use that leg at all, and what they'd done, they had a look at me on the hospital ship, which wasn't Navy. And then when they decided that I could be treated by a Navy one, I went on there and they made a tent, a round tent over my legs, and switched it on every so often, all through the day. And the heat, we walked quite a while, for about a month or more I was on that, until I could finally get away on one leg, you know, and when I did get better, when I could get, they sent for somebody to take me back to Chatham, and on that, so I got back to Chatham. Well, that's when I started having all sorts of things with the Navy, and half the crew was picked up, had all been drafted to the Ashanti.
Another tribal.
Yeah. Which she broke her back in peacetime, and she was up in the Tyne, being repaired, and she was almost ready to go to sea. And so the
right, well, let's pause there and just give you a throat a rest. We can just stop. Okay, right, we're off again. So you moved to Ashanti, who was up in the top.
I've done a bit of a thing with the officers there in barracks in Chatham.
What, cooking for them?
That's it. Mm-hmm. We managed to get on with the old crew, you see, on the Ashanti.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when we had to go at... where do we go first then? Back to Scapa. We went to Northampton, that's it. Scapa. And then I think we went somewhere on some runs up range Scapa Flow. And then we came up to, Germans had a good old go on PQ. I don't know which. Number it was, but PQ-17 I think was the one we were on, but the one before us, it got fogged up? Yeah, it fogged out, a thick fog.
Yeah.
And they were told that the safest way to get any ships through was to scatter.
Yes.
And it went wrong and most of them got sunk.
Right.
On that convoy.
Yes.
So everybody, well, the Admiralty decided that, or Churchill did, that we wouldn't be fool enough to go up there again, not straight away. So he said, we want another convoy to go up there and do, which I think was PQ-17.
Right.
And that was the one we went on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one where we had our house bell, the envoy. You only got about 5 crew, if it's that. We had Fokker Wolf, not only Fokker Wolf beating us up, but in one place off Bear Island, we had an attack there of 111s in there or something.
Eichels, yeah.
Carry two torpedoes each, and it was over 50 of them, and they come in line abreast, and there was 104 underwater explosions from that one attack.
God.
So they sorted the convoy out quite a bit, and then when we got, we managed to keep going with what was left, and we finally made it. The Russians was going to send a boat out to help us, but they didn't appear. And when we got to, we finally got to Vermont, and we were with about five boats, I think. But we've got a problem. We used all the ammo going up in that convoy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to stay up there a fortnight, and the skipper got fed up. He said, we ain't waiting no longer. So we braved it, and we got back to home, you know.
So you came back without any ammunition?
Yeah.
Did you come back on your own?
Yeah.
So you came back very fast, basically.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Keep your head down.
Tribals could do about 45.
Yes.
So that, we done that. We got back.
Tell me a bit about Murmansk, though. You were there for 2 weeks. What was it like in Murmansk?
Awful. When we were there, we done a bit of swapping, dealing.
Mm.
And I got somewhere in that parcel up there, which you can take up to where we're going with it. The buses, Koi. You could get anything from the Matlows up there, the Russian Matlows. So I got two hats or three hats. I've still got them in good nick.
What did you give them to get the hats back?
Pusher's Kai.
Oh, Kai?
Yeah. It was in big slabs, you know.
Yes, yep.
Yeah. Oh, that was good money, that was.
Yeah.
You could do that. So I got three of those, which you can take with you on that. Up there, but then we wired away with a bit of boat pulling. That's when I got bloody pimples.
And your back's boat pulling.
Yeah.
Right.
And on there, a bit of shooting with a 2-2 and all that.
Uh-huh.
And then the skipper decided we'd come back, and we legged it back and got back then. And then I've done altogether probably 3 or 4, or probably even 5 convoys up to Russia. But the next big one episode in our life was we got back on one, and then they decided that they was going to break through to Malta to get to Malta to get the stuff that they can go in from the Atlantic. But they couldn't get into the Atlantic, they had to go around Africa at that time. But so Old Church of White Way got into this from Jib to Malta. So that was Pedestal, I think. And the line up, there was 16 Liberty ships, all loaded up with planes and oil and tankers and that. Right up, and then we started off. Well, I shouldn't think we got hardly through the Straits of Gibraltar, where we've got a ditty box aircraft carrier, the Eagle, I think it was, and she copped it straight away. So that was the first one. And then the next one, we've got the Isaac Spears. That was a Dutch destroyer. That went up in a cloud of black smoke away from us, and that kept on. And then as we progressed along, we had all these attacks. We got near to the Straits of Pantelleria, and there was a Cape Bon, I think it is, or is it?
Yeah, you've got a good memory.
Yeah. And
Pantelleria, that's right.
When we got there, the Manchester caught a packet. She got beached. And then we kept going on, we got e-boats and everything on from the Italian side. We got through there, and then the next day, the Nigeria was got the leader of the convoy.
Mm. Convoy commodore, yeah.
Yeah. And she caught 3 fish in the guts. And went tipped over on her side. And her bloke, Captain Richard Onslow.
Captain Dickie Onslow, right.
Yeah, he was a good man, he was.
Yeah.
And we pulled right up to the Nigeria and took the Admiral off.
Mm-hmm.
And he come on to the Ashanti, and we were leader of the convoy then.
Right.
And we kept on then, right through. There was one or two other boats caught up back in there. Anyway, we got nearly into Malta, and we were near enough to see Malta quite clearly, and we turned around and come back.
So you didn't go into Malta, you just saw the ships?
No,
how many of the convoy ships got through?
Oh, only about three.
About three out of 15 merchantmen?
Yeah.
Right. Now, is that the trip, or was it in the Arctic? You once told me about Manning being told to come and man the Aztec. Was that on the Arctic?
No, that was on the Arctic.
That in the Arctic. Yeah. Now, tell me about that again. I know, you know.
Well, we were going up there, and of course it was a nice day, sunshine and everything. It was hunky-dory. And then, on the horizon, two German U-boats on the surface. So we were detached to go and see what we could do. But the skipper thought that it was a trick, that when we get near them, one would go and the other would ping us, would have us, you see.
Uh-huh.
So when we got near to where he sighted them, he said, all hands on deck, with lifeboats on, so all that. So of course I was down in the shell room, down the bottom of action stations, you see. And that was my age, where I had to go. And of course everybody was rushing up there, all these people to getting up on the upper deck. And poor old George sat in his little office there with one pair of ear things on, and all his people, one or two other Aztec engines, they had gone up on deck as well. So George says, where are you going, Chef? I says, going up on the top. I said, but the others, they all got on the upper deck. Well, that's no good. He says, well, I can't manage by myself. He says, come on in here. I says, oh, George, no, I can't come in there. He says, will you come and sit down? And I looked at the axe on the door and I thought, well, if he gets it, I could get out anyway. And because I sits down, and he says, when I give you the reading, you talk it up to the bridge will take it back, and that'll be a... Well, that was all right for the first one or two. And then, whereas he was started tracking on this U-boat, he was doing it almost all the time. Well, I wasn't getting time to see whether it was right. I'm sure I gave the wrong, you know,
yeah.
on it. And anyway, they claimed the U-boat for it.
Did they?
Oh, well, right. George got a blinking medal, and I never got nothing. You know, it just showed on it.
Mm.
And anyway, that was that. And that was a funny one. And of course, I don't know what we got on with the convoy, and that was it. You know,
well, that was just interesting. That. No, I remember you telling me that.
That's quite right, that is, yeah.
Right, so going back to Ashanti then, you got to Malta, turned around and came back again.
We got the Italian fleet on the way back.
Yeah.
Approved the Pantelleria again. Anyway, they opted it when they could see we still got one or two big iron, bits of iron. And then, of course, it wouldn't run all that longer then. We didn't come right home. It was the Iran when the Navy and the Army went into North Africa.
Mm.
And we went with the Rodney up to Iran, and the Rodney stood off and put a couple of 16 inches ashore.
Uh-huh. So you were escorting the Rodney?
The Rodney up there, yeah.
Uh-huh. For the North African landings?
That's the North African landings. And it was just ashore. It went up over the hill, and there was a tunnel there, and she got them as well, you know. And then we sailed in there, just round it, around first of all, and then we got nearer, and then we was all on take watches on the frogmen, Italian frogmen. Mm. So we all had to do a night work and that on that, you know.
Did you get attacked by Italian frogmen?
No. But on that, but on that pedestal when I missed a bit, that was another job I'd done that I didn't get. But the chefs hadn't got anything to do much, you see, only make cups of tea and sandwiches. No cooking much there, without arts and like that. And what we done, on top of the stove, it was in two big tanks, and oil underneath, you see, and you'd use these tanks as one as a steamer for a lot of spuds or something like that, and the other one for water for making curry or whatever it was. And so that was for two, I don't know how many days it was we were on that, but as you'd emptied the one with super that inside, you filled it up with water and that become the tea water. So you had peas in with your tea on.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened to me on that motor one, I got sent up on an unusual job. I don't know why, but I think it was because somebody got shell-shocked.
Mm.
And one of the seamen was on an hurricane gun amidships, and he sat up there on this thing, this seat light, and he could bend it his way for the soccer wolves, they come down, you know, boom. And I had to go up off the deck and be his loader. Mm. And of course I hadn't got nothing to hide with. So of course when these Stukas come down, you could see the pilot as kind as all up here, bang, 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 because they were 4 inches and 6 inches long, them bullets.
Mm.
And every fourth one was a one, yeah.
Was a tracer, yeah.
And of course all of you, get ready. Well, I took my eye and the bloody thing is going around me. I thought one of them was going to hit us in a minute, but we got away with it. I thought that was another job I got and near miss then, really. And the other thing I wanted to say about Captain Richard Onslow, as soon as we got out of harbour anywhere, he'd say, all hands changed to sea going rig. And you could get all great panels out. And he was sat there.
You didn't have to wear uniform at sea?
No. He let you wear what you like. And he used to sit on the top of the bridge.
Mm.
With one of these hats, you know, straw hats.
Yeah.
And he'd sit up there, big pair of binoculars, and he'd watch these Stukas and like that, and he'd watch them bombs come down like that. Either stern, either two parts, or starboard, whichever it was. And the back of the boat would go round like that, and the bomb went and down like that.
He was quite a character, I think, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a good love
man. Have you got any stories about him?
Yeah, he got to be the big man, didn't he?
Yes.
In a time. Mm. Oh, he was a good man. Good many ways. You know, it was an easy-going ship, really. And he was ever so good. I mean, you had to do like Saturday morning rounds and all that if you were in harbour. The first to do that was Lurcott. He was another mate of Will.
Who was it?
Lurcott, was it? Jimmy at one time.
Right. Don't know his name, but we can check up on that.
He was another big one in Admiralty. Mm. He got to the woods. And who was the other one then? He was only a young one. And he used to be dole the money out. And if you were anywhere and you hadn't got any money, you could always tap him for a bit, and he'd let you have a couple of quid. And then you top out your money when you know, it's too early. So he was a good bloke. But that old Onslow, I always think about him. I think somewhere along the line, he'd got some relatives at Deddington Way with a Dr. Jones. It was a Dr. Jones.
Yeah, Dr. Jones used to live up the road, didn't he?
Yeah. On the green.
Yeah.
That's it. No, I think this bloke used to be there. That's on there. And then, of course, what did I got to then?
Well, we got to Ashanti, you got to North Africa.
We've done North Africa, and then we've done Palm Boys over to Palm Boys in between there, the Straits of, between there and Sicily,
mm-hmm.
up there, until that was running clean then.
Mm-hmm.
Along there. But the rest of that big convoy, when we got back to, when we finally got back to Jib, I think it was the Illustrious, the aircraft carrier, and they dropped two bombs and that had gone through two decks on her, and that was that motor convoy. There was a lot of ships off there, and when we went ashore that night, in Jib, and it's the first time I ever saw the matlows, dump matlows, they were laid in the bloody streets everywhere, and one lot they've been falling out with some marines, and they got him trapped between two sliding doors, one side and the other side, but now they're all there on there. But of course, that was that coast where with the man who never was, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they landed in the submarine. That's right. Yeah.
That was another funny thing there. And then we did do a bit of a thing down over the equator. We went down there. There was a ship on fire, and we went down there. We went ashore. We couldn't find this ship, give us a chance to see where the fishermen had been out to sea. They come in and they got these big fish, and they got ropes tied across the beach, and they slit them open, and the sun dried them with hours, and then they could eat it then.
Mm.
You know, straight away like that.
Mm.
And that's where I see the Daily Mail this week, flying fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where you first flying fish.
Yes, and I tasted one.
But
they wouldn't have caught like an herring, that's all.
Yeah.
And I saw a fish eagle down there.
Mm.
That was another thing. But down there, and that was on there, of course. What was the other thing?
So where did you go? Where did Ashanti then go? Did she?
And she carried on. Ashanti, that's right, we got back to there. They took us back then to England.
Right.
They was going to give us a boiler clean.
Right.
Yeah, so we got to...
So at that point is when you then moved into submarines. So we'll do that as a separate thing. Yeah, so we'll just stop there a minute. Right, okay, so before we finish with the shanty, is there any other stories that you remember? You just...
Let's see, let me try and think. Oh, my ain't in so long, but that's not, no shanty.
No, just about a shanty. You were about to tell me.
I was going to tell you... Let me try and think. I got somewhere. We saw that's there. No, I've lost it. I was going to tell you something else. Never mind. That's it'll come.
Have a look at your notes. See whether it's in your notes there.
I then got, oh, got my leg quick, got my leg caught going on that no, one.
That's all past that, yeah.
The convoy was packed full of action. The cruiser hit by deuterium, that's gone. That's gone. Coulter. Oh, he got me a medal from Malta.
You got a medal from Malta?
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. One. Which medal did you get from Malta?
Yeah, yeah, that was 50 years before they gave it us. But I had to apply, and I could have it in this country by post, or I could go to Malta and have it in Malta.
So it was a Malta medal you got, was it?
Yeah.
That's
okay. A good one.
Right.
That's a good one, that one. Yes,
yeah.
That was a
yeah,
good one.
You probably earned that. Yes. Yeah.
And I think we also, we got the names of all those who took a part in there. It's on the war memorial there.
In Malta?
In Malta.
Yeah, probably.
What was it? Something Gardens in Malta. And I think it was going to be all the names of the ships and that.
Right.
There.
Yeah.
That was there. On there.